Good LAFC faithful defenders nation, welcome to episode 296 of the LAFC podcast, heard in well over 100 countries worldwide, also like 3,000 cities. But like, how do they even know that? You could be driving from one city to another. It could be multiple cities in one episode, because we don't know when to shut up sometimes. But the we this time is a little different. You know my voice, it's the scarf. J.R. Liebert sitting here in front of the semi-famous scarf wall in beautiful Lawndale, California. Actually, it's not beautiful. I'm not going to lie. I feel like I'm in Portland right now. What is going on? It's raining outside. It's cold. And the internets have replaced one Christian Philly Philemon for this episode with somebody who you know very well. If you followed along with Defenders of the Bank, 110 Football, or just LAFC content in general, the guy's like photobombing every ninth picture I think that LAFC puts up on their website. He has affectionately only called himself the Philly Fill-In, but I will let this man to my, I believe that's my right on the internet, introduce himself, one Chris Lafferty.
Hello, Defenders! I copied your intro last time, I'll copy Philly's. We have a theme here. Apparently, anytime we wear a smokescreen kit, that's when one of you guys goes, I can't anymore, and just puts me in. So I'm back, folks. It's great to be back after recapping Colorado's game. I'm thrilled to be back on Defenders of the Bank. This is my favorite podcast. So to be on it is a total pleasure and an honor to join you on this beautiful that's a lie. It's not a beautiful day, but it is a pleasure to join you, JR, on this Sunday morning. Wow.
All right. Listen, shameless plug. I have to have you show off your t-shirt that you are wearing right now. It's the first one I've seen in the wild. It's the world famous Philomonster Studios in Burbank, California. And look, I asked you this off air. I'm going to ask you it on air because you gave the right answer. So I would love you to tell the millions.
And millions
about the quality of this t-shirt. I promise I didn't pay him to buy the shirt, but then I'm not paying him for his testimonial. How do you feel about the shirt? What did you order? Tell the public.
Well, you're right. I have the credit card to save and show that I bought it. but no, the shirt feels great. I got it last night after I got home. It's soft. It fits great too. You know, I love that the sleeves are nice and fitted, so it doesn't feel baggy, like your arms are kind of swimming in there, or like you're wearing some like MC Hammer pants on your arms where they're just floating everywhere. No, these things fit great. It's a great fit all around. The material's soft. The graphic shows up great. Feels like printed on really well. I love this shirt. Like, I put it on today and I was like, oh, this is really good. I'm not just doing it to pop the crowd here. This is one I'm going to wear in heavy rotation. So,
well, that's dude. Thank you, brother, for supporting. If you guys want your own Defenders of the Bank merch, head on over to defendersofthebank.com. That's bank with a C. Click on the shop tab at the top. And we want to say a big thank you to our partners at 500 level for partnering with us. There we go. On all of our merch. We got a Philly in the chat, by the way, who is chatting with us from Citi Field. Let me give you a quick update on where Philly is right now. Yesterday, Philly attended the Doc Gooden, bobblehead ceremony was last night. I think the retirement might be tonight, or maybe I'm off. Philly's going to correct me in the chat, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that the number retirement is tonight. The bobblehead was yesterday for Doc Gooden at Citi Field. Philly and I, by the way, diehard Mets fans, as many of you know, here on Defenders Nation. But what we didn't know about each other, because we didn't know each other when we did it, what, like 10 or 12 years ago, Philly and I both purchased bricks, or families purchased bricks for us outside of Citi Field. And we are literally like one brick block over from each other. As weird as that might sound, we were destined to be together at some point. Very jealous of Philly and Panda, of course, in New York, visiting their family, getting to have a wonderful time at Citi Field. Philly, in the chat, you're going to have to answer us. I didn't check. Did the Islanders actually win a game you attended for the first time in a while, or are you still continuing the Philly curse on Ireland games? I want to remind everybody real quick, that the Mo Fazio Futsal Court fundraising effort is still underway. Head on over to lafc.com/Mo-Fazio for all your fundraising efforts going towards the futsal court. We got to get this court built. We want to play games out there. We want to celebrate Mo. So please make sure that you donate. We're going to do our very best to make this a very typical Defenders of the Bank episode, of course, with this day in LAFC history and news and notes. I love that Jonathan Reimer is chiming in the chat as well. He says, I just got to work. The package is on my desk, and it's his Defenders shirts. Oh, my God. This is like a dream come true. We got Lafferty with his. We got Jonathan Reimer of Shoulder to Shoulder podcast with his. We love you guys. We appreciate the support. Philly has not chatted back, so I have no idea if the Islanders won or lost yet. I'm going to assume it's a loss because if Philly would have been full-throated, Lafferty, in his
I believe the game that Philly went to, they won. However, last night they played the New York Rangers. I think it was the New York Rangers, and lost in a shootout loss. So just wanted to put that out there for statistical accuracy on everything. So
I don't know if our listeners will hate a New York Rangers hat more or any of my Tom Brady references, but I wasn't planning on bringing him up on the podcast, so that's fine. But again, we want to thank everybody in the chat for joining.
Well, you know what?
We're
not going to give them any Hello Kitty appearances, so
that is for
sure.
We're not
going to give them any Hello Kitty appearances, so I'm sure they could live with a New York Rangers hat today.
Yeah, Hello Kitty will most assuredly not be making an appearance on this podcast. Let's get into a very quick this day in LAFC history. We're going to go all the way back to our maiden voyage into MLS on April 13th, 2018. LAFC went on the road just like we did on April 13th, 2024, except this time we played on carpet in Vancouver, winning 2-0 behind goals from, oh, you know, Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi. Love that. Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, I miss those guys. One of them is still in MLS. The other is the face of our franchise. Omar Gaber made his MLS debut as a substitute for Marco Ureña in the 81st minute. Omar Gaber lasted all of about a half a season before he got homesick and went back to Pyramids FC in Egypt. But the debut in MLS for Omar Gaber on a 2-0 road win. And I genuinely thought the scoreline could have been 2-0 yesterday for LAFC because they repeated that scoreline just 1 year later, April 13, 2019, FC Cincinnati's maiden voyage into MLS. They journeyed over to Bank of California Stadium, and it was Mark Anthony Kay, as Philly likes to call him, the Canadian glory machine, scoring in the 32nd minute along with a stoppage time goal in the 90th plus three for, yep, that guy again, Carlos Vela. So 2-0 wins on April 13th, 2018 and 2019. That is your this day in LAFC history. But Lafferty, you reminded me pre-show that we had a very special birthday that we want to shout out here at Defenders of the Bank. A true friend of the podcast celebrated their birthday yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to do this birthday shout out for LA. Happy birthday to DJ Flicked. Yesterday was his birthday. I'm glad that he got to have a match on his birthday. Unfortunately, it wasn't at our home. But awesome guy. I know he's been on Defenders of the Bank before, and that was a great interview to listen to. Just a nice guy overall. If you ever get the privilege of meeting him, I remember one time after a game, he helped me out. I was trying to get up to the Sunset Deck to hang out with you guys afterwards. Security was being real tight. Flick was like, oh, no, he's with me. Hey, don't worry. And he pulled me with him and he got me up there to the party. Just super cool. Love everything he's done for LAFC, not only with the anthem and all the music he's made, but just how great he treats everybody. So Flicked, I hope you had a wonderful birthday.
Yeah, the frustrating part is we specifically told security not to let you in that night. So Flicked used his powers that be to get you in. Up to thwarted our best efforts as usual, did one DJ Flick. Chris Apari, happy birthday, my friend. Want to give a quick shout out to Angel City FC and our Angel City Minute. They traveled to Chicago. Good morning, Mario. Thank you for joining us in the chat. Angel City traveling to Chicago to take on the Red Stars and it was their best defensive effort of the season. A Claire Emsley free kick led to a Chicago own goal in the 40th, and ACFC made it stick for the much-needed first win of this campaign for Angel City, the 1-0 win. Their next match is Sunday at BMO, April 21st. We've got a home match against the Red Bulls on the 20th for LAFC and a home match against North Carolina Courage, there we go, on April 21st for Angel City. So a full weekend of football at BMO Stadium. And then, by the way, just 5 days later, they stick around at BMO and play the Kansas City Current at 7 p.m. So two matches over the next 7 days for Angel City, and both of them are at home. Please make sure that you check in to the Angel City Chicks for all of your ACFC news on any platform you listen to podcast. Follow at Angel City Chicks. And, you know, this is the Chicago Red Stars not playing at Soldier Field like the Chicago Fire do. But Lafferty, you actually have been to, what is it now called, SeatGeek Stadium in Bridgeview?
SeatGeek Stadium, I can't remember. It was, I think, maybe Toyota Stadium back in the day. A little brief history here. I lived in Chicago from 2008 to 2018, moved to LA on New Year's Day 2019. And in that time, the Chicago Fire were my old MLS team. Now, I don't know if you can say I was really behind them. I went to 3 matches in those 10 years. But one of those was on July 16th, 2011, at that stadium where the Angel City played yesterday. It was against the Portland Timbers in their inaugural season. So that I got to see these guys from the beginning, the team that we're going to talk about later on. But I also got to witness history that night, because Diego Chara got his third yellow card of his career in front of my very eyes at Bridgeview Stadium in Chicago. And forget one that we didn't have to go back and look up ahead of time as we prepared for this. One, it's just fresh in my brain at all times. So,
right. Yeah, look, that obviously a momentous occasion. It was Toyota Park back then. Now it is SeatGeek Stadium. Wow. All right, Lafferty, I have a trivia question for you, because I love to throw these random things out at Philly. You saw the Chicago Fire take on Portland Timbers July 16th, 2011. The season before you and I talked about was John Thorington's last season in the league with Chicago Fire. Mm-hmm. Diego Chara, the longest tenured member with one club in Major League Soccer right now. In fact, his 13th anniversary of his first minutes with Portland is coming up in just 9 days. But my question for you, sir, even though we are 13 years removed from that match, who was the other player that you saw on that pitch? And I'll say this, it was for Portland. The other player that you saw on that pitch, still not just playing in MLS today, but absolutely thriving. I love this. It's fun for me. All right, you ready? I'm going to give you a hint. He was a major part.
Please do.
He was a major part of the butt kicking that we received in the MLS Cup final last year. This is great. He is stunned. This makes for terrible podcast time when no one talks, but it's hilarious for me to watch Lafferty. Got to go through the Rolodex of names that he saw there in Chicago. All right, my friend. That would be one.
You know, the names are all just kind of flopping around in my head, just like these guys were all, those guys were all game.
Yeah,
you got to give it to me. I'm stumped.
Darlington.
See, you know, I couldn't remember his name. I could not remember his name, but I do remember him flopping around on the ground. That's why I said the name's just flopping around in my head, but I couldn't remember what his name was. All I just remember him was the guy on the ground the whole game crying. But yeah, so not only did I see Diego Chara's third career yellow card, I also saw Darlington Nagbe on the field that day. Wow, that didn't stick out nearly as much as the yellow card for some reason. But, yeah, right, what a historic night for me, I guess.
Absolutely. Real quick, as we round out our news and notes segment, LAFC 2 lost for their first time this season, falling 2-0 on the road to the Tacoma Defiance in their last match. Their next match is today, and it is a big one, sort of, I guess. At 1 p.m. on the campus of Cal State Fullerton, head on over to Titan Stadium for the first edition of the new version of what we call the Dose Derby, where LAFC 2 used to take on Los Gross, Galaxy 2, in this, but it's now Ventura County FC. That's right. Galaxy 2 have rebranded to Ventura County FC to become, by the way, the second professional team in Ventura County. But that being said, Ventura County FC taking on LAFC 2 at home, Titan Stadium, campus of Cal State Fullerton, 1 p.m. I will be there. If anybody wants to come and hang out, say that you listened to the episode and said, hey, Scarf, you said you'd be there. I came to meet you there. I will buy you a beer at the game. It's cold, so you might not want a beer. As Ruben says, it's cold in Fullerton. Wear a coat. Yeah, it's not raining here in Lawndale right now, but it's been raining off and on all across L.A. today, very much reminding us of Portland. All right, but Lafferty, let's finally get into this match against the Portland Timbers. LAFC heading up to what can be at times friendly confines in Providence Park. We helped them open their newly renovated Providence Park in 2019, where we promptly greeted them with a 2-1 victory, spoiling the new digs over there at Providence Park, formerly Geldwen Field, and then like 15 other things before that. But either way, Providence Park, actually a really nice place to go see a match. And I've said this before, and it is one of those things. Yeah, there we go. Mario Alvarado shouting out the Ventura County Fusion, the first professional football team in Ventura County. The one thing that I cannot believe, and I didn't believe it until I saw it with my own eyes, Lafferty, is that Timbers Army, one of the better supporters sections in all of Major League Soccer, and certainly they were heard quite a bit on the broadcast, LAFC, obviously the 3252 heard very well on the broadcast on Apple TV. It blows me away that Timbers Army needs to line up at their gate, and those seats are first come, first serve for anybody, I would assume, other than Timber Joey in Timbers Army. They have to sit and sleep sometimes outside. What we saw in 2019 as Philly and I were leaving the bar, if you watched One More Sleep, we talked about how we were invited out by a bunch of the Timbers Army supporters. We went out, we were drinking, we left the bar late, and then we almost tripped over, I would say, dozens and dozens of members of the Timbers Army. They were literally sleeping in tents and sleeping bags right outside of Providence Park so that they could get the best seats. It just blows my mind. Can you imagine making any of the 3252 sleep outside the night before the match? Lafferty, it was just something that totally blew me away. Oh, Lafferty, you there? Uh-oh. We may be having some technical difficulties on Chris Lafferty's end. He is kind of doing a Max Headroom thing right now. Can you hear me? Uh-oh. We lost Lafferty's vocals. Not sure what's going on Lafferty's end right now. But, oh, is he there? Did you hit the mute button? What happened there, bud?
I think I'm back. I did not, but
yeah,
I,
you're back.
I did start to think it. If you put the 3250 outside, I don't think it'd be a problem because they'd probably have a big party. But you know, you mentioned everybody except Timber Joey would probably have to fight for their seats. Well, he's got a chainsaw, so I really wouldn't want to fight that guy if it came down to it. I'd let him sit wherever the heck he wants.
Yeah, dude, chainsaws tend to even out the playing field no matter who you're in a fight with, that's for sure. Portland and LAFC faced each other 18 times before this match, with LAFC getting the slight edge. I believe we have now 7 wins, 6 draws, and 6 losses to them in our overall tenure, 19 times now that we have faced them. Coming into this match in the regular season, we had played them 15 times, and it sounded like every movie phone number, 5-5-5, 5 wins, 5 losses, and 5 draws heading into this one. So we are now 5-5-6 against the Portland Timbers in our tenure. And that is Phil Neville, not Giovanni Savarese, but Phil Neville leading the way for Portland, formerly of Miami, until Messi got there. And he was like, I'm bringing all of my friends. And Phil, I don't know you that well, so I'm bringing in Tata Martino. So Tata is in Miami. Phil Neville was out, and he is here in Portland looking to remake things. And we absolutely talked about a couple of the players who were huge in this match on One More Sleep, but slept on one, that's for sure. And we'll talk about the real deal in just a little bit. But what we did talk about was that they brought on five players from their bench in the second half to fuel a 3-3 comeback draw. They were down 3-0 at halftime to Sporting Kansas City and brought on five guys. Well, three of the bench mob that came on to fuel that 3-3 comeback against Sporting were now in the starting 11, and I'll talk about those as we go through the roster. Look, the player that jumped off the page, even though I think Cabecita had a wonderful game, but the player who we didn't mention much in One More Sleep, and we will certainly mention throughout this match, is Evander, the real deal, and he was fantastic in this match. We'll talk about him quite a bit, but before we do that, I'll go through the Portland starting lineup, and then Lafferty, you'll take us through, stop us if you've heard this before, the LAFC starting lineup, and then we will give our minute-by-minute breakdown. Portland coming out in a 4-2-3-1, and those three players that came off the bench in Sporting that are now starting for Portland would be one, Claudio Bravo, Felipe Mora, and Diego Chara. But we all know their goalkeeper very, very well. And I have to say, I did not have on my 2024 bingo card Maxime Crépeau with a red card in this match. You can see Lafferty holding up. Looks like he's got some signed swag there by Maxime Crépeau. I believe, was that from one of those flex things that we did at Lowe's at one point?
No, that was actually at Party Beer Co. After a day of volunteering, you and I went over to Party Beer Co. where Maxime Crépeau was doing a kind of Q&A hosted by Vince LaRosa. And then also doing a meet and greet yesterday was Maxime Crépeau to the traveling supporters up in Portland for our 3252, saying hello to his old buddies. So what a guy. What a guy.
Yeah, I believe Gutierrez in the chat calling him Agent Crépeau for us in this match. Max, we appreciate the help you tried to give us there, taking out Denis Bawanga for a red card. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But yeah, it was Maxime Crépeau between the pipes for Portland. The back line consisting of Claudio Bravo, Kamal Miller, Miguel Araujo, and Juan Mosquera. And I have to say, the back line for Portland, not very good this season. They've given up what, the most goals or second most goals other than San Jose Earthquakes, who just can't stop hemorrhaging goals up in San Jose, but given up the second most goals, at least in the West, if not in all of Major League Soccer. But I will say the play of Juan Mosquera really stood out as I watched that match, just one-on-one, really making things problematic. Defended Denis Bawanga pretty well, made some great inroads on the offensive side of things as well. Juan Mosquera, a player that I didn't know much about before this match, but certainly jumped out after watching those 90-plus minutes. In the midfield, we mentioned Diego Chara in the starting lineup along with David Ayala and Anthony, who played pretty well, had a pretty good game for them in the midfield. And where most of the commotion came from was the forward spots of Evander and Jonathan Cabecita Rodriguez coming over from Club America, a player who was linked to LAFC many times in the offseason. This last offseason certainly looked the part of a talisman, true number nine, kind of a striker. And rounding out the lineup would be Felipe Mora. The players who we would see coming off the bench in the 18 were Cristian Paredes, Santiago Moreno, Dairon Asprilla, Eric Miller, and goalkeeper James Pantemis, the 27-year-old goalkeeper from Montreal who played with Montreal for several seasons before joining Portland. He also spent some time in, I promise this is a real thing, the Canadian Premier League with Valor FC. But again, 40 matches played for Montreal. He did have, by the way, 25% clean sheet percentage, 10 clean sheets in 40 matches for Montreal, but he was not renewed after 2023. So James Pantemis, talking an awful lot about the backup keeper. That's because we'll see him. Let's get into the lineup for the black and gold Lafferty. Who do we have in black and gold? And this is not a broken record, we promise.
So the last 10 of the last 11 matches have been the same roster starting at 11 for every game. Palencia has been the only difference where he didn't start at the beginning of the season and then worked his way in, mixed with kind of an Omar Campos injury / Sergi Palencia's play, really got him in the starting lineup. So here, let me see if I can do this by memory. In goalkeeper, we have, let me guess, Hugo Lloris.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Sergi Palencia, like we talked about earlier. Aaron Long on that back line, also with Jesus David Murillo. Ryan Hollingshead. In the midfield, we have Edward Atuesta. We have Elias Sanchez, our captain, and Timothy Tillman, or Himothy, as he's been known lately to the LAFC faithful. Forwards, we have Kike Oliveira. We have Matty Bogush, who we'll talk about a couple of times, and Denny Bawanga. Now, we say we have an 18, but if you do the math, which I think is your specialty, JR, we have Omar Campos, Kai Kamara, Nathan Ordaz. And, well, since I own a smokescreen kit, I guess that makes me eligible to play because there's open spots for that. Anyone else with it? I think we need like 4 more spots. So grab your smokescreen kit, head on up to Portland, and you were ready to play.
Yeah, we've definitely run with a shorter bench. Definitely who in the way of substitutions, if not, you know, sometimes filling out the full 18, we've brought players up like Diego Rosales, like Luca Bombino, and like Luis Muller several times on these short-term contracts. No need for short-term contracts in this one. We did have a full complement of our bench, but it's just a matter of guys who Steve Cherundolo trusts at this point to run the system. And like you mentioned, the only three that we would see were Omar Campos, Kai Kamara, and Nathan Ordaz. And even Maxime Crepeau on the broadcast brought up, or maybe it was Brian Dunseth, I don't know which one of the two of them did, that it was likely that if not for a yellow card to Sergi Palencia, that we might not even have seen Omar Campos in this one. So if you can imagine, just Kai Kamara and Nathan Ordaz coming on for LAFC for offensive purposes. But that being said, we are going to talk a lot about yellow cards in this match. We're going to talk a lot about some questionable refereeing decisions. And again, and I hate to bring this up, but it happened at least once, if not twice, in this match. Another couple of big-time missed opportunities for last year's Golden Boot winner, Denny Bawanga, to get himself higher up the goal charts this year. Again, 3 goals, 2 assists, nothing to shake a stick at, but we're talking about the reigning, defending, Golden Boot-winning player for LAFC in Denny Bawanga. So we need a little bit more. Hiram Estrada talking about Atuesta needing to chill. And I actually want to bury the lead a little bit and get something out of the way at the very start of our recap. Edward Atuesta picked up a yellow card in like the 86th, 87th minute. That is yellow card number 5 for Edward Atuesta, which means he is suspended for our match against the New York Red Bulls. The division leading New York Red Bulls the last time I saw, I think. I'll have to go back and look at the MLS standings. But coming into Saturday, they were certainly the Eastern Conference leading New York Red Bulls. They are now tied. They are still leading with Miami and actually leading if you go by goals or, points per match. But I absolutely agree with Hiram Estrada in our chat. Edward Atuesta does need to chill. So many of these yellow cards have been unnecessary. And this one, so late in the match, causing him to be suspended. Look, what that likely means is something like Kai Kamara starting up top, Matty Bogush, who had his breakout game of the year, sitting back and now playing in the midfield alongside Ilya and Timothy Tillman. So it does change the complexion. Lafferty, you gave us the lineup when we talked about it. What, 10 of our 11 guys have started all 8 matches on the season for us so far. That will certainly not be the case against the New York Red Bulls next week.
You're right, 10 of 11. I mean, it's unfortunate that we're going to have to play without Atuesta, but it's the double-edged sword of a guy like him. It's what we know about him. What we love about him is that he's that fire that we need a lot of times if we're lacking in that aggressiveness. We can always count on him for it. Unfortunately, we can always count on him to be aggressive, and sometimes that's too aggressive. So a guy like Atuesta, you kind of expect yellow cards. You would just hope that maybe they'd pace out a little bit wider throughout the season so that we don't have to have them suspended for a yellow card accumulation so early on. That kind of makes you wonder, is this how it's going to be all season, where you have to maybe you can't count on him for every fifth match because he's going to keep accumulating as the season goes on? We'll have to wait and see, obviously. But also, you don't want to ask a guy like Atuesta to change his style of play too much, because that aggressiveness also is something that the rest of the team needs to feed off of at times. And it's kind of sets the tone and sets the standard for how we should be playing aggressively. So it's, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. We'll just see. Hopefully he can learn to control it or, hide it better, his moves, and hopefully not get so many yellow cards as the season goes on, because we can't keep it at that pace for the entire year.
Yeah, he's got to quit the silly ones for sure. I mean, look, there's one thing if you're giving a tactical foul every now and again. We've seen that from Ilya Sanchez a couple of times. We saw it, I believe, from Timothy Tillman in the second or third match of the season. But some of these silly ones, middle of the park, foul for no reason, the double kick at Evander in this one, which gave him the yellow card, rightfully so, for this match. Just some of these need to stop for sure. The other thing that we needed to stop was the losing streak on the road. LAFC coming into the match 0-3 on the road this season. And so looking for our first result of any kind other than a loss on the road. And look, I wrote this down, and I kind of sound like Jerry Seinfeld the way that I wrote this. But here's the exact way I wrote this. We can talk about it, and then we'll get into the match. What is the deal with the Timbers and their lack of sponsors on the front of their kit? I had no idea that they didn't have a sponsor on the front of their kit. Who was their sponsor last season, or even the season before? I'm having trouble remembering who the Portland Timbers sponsor was. But it's full-on Chicago Fire right now on the front of their kit the last couple of seasons. It just looks terrible out there with just that center crest logo, which they went with, which kind of makes these look like practice kits, but no front of kit sponsor for the Portland Timbers right now.
So the reason behind that is they actually switched sponsors in this past offseason to go to a company named DeBell. I don't have the info in front of me what they do or what the company does, but if you may recall early on, it was just a giant butterfly and underneath it said DeBell. Something happened where there was a big lawsuit or a whistle was blown about harassment or some kind of workplace violations. That was a big news, kind of blew up a story. And I believe Portland pulled kind of a morality clause and said, oh, well, if that's how you're going to operate, you're no longer our sponsor, and ended the deal. So I believe it was Portland who initiated canceling the deal based on something that was going on in the company that kind of violated their values. So while they started the season with a sponsor, they 86'd that real quick. So you're right. It's an odd look for them to kind of see no front of kit sponsor for them, especially when they started the year with one. But that's where we stand right now. For those of you keeping track and following all the jersey sponsor drama throughout the league.
Yeah. So DeBella.
And actually, is an interesting note too.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So you mentioned going full on Chicago Fire with no jersey sponsor. Chicago Fire do have a jersey sponsor now, Carvana. However, in the last decade sometime, there was actually a lawsuit where the Illinois Attorney General barred Carvana from doing business in Illinois. something like that. And so they can, they're now sponsored by a company that cannot do business in their state. So,
all right. So, so to get you back up to speed real quick, DiBella.
Really bad a thousand with sponsors.
Yeah, right. They really are. DiBella is a Hillsboro-based home improvement contractor. It was the team's first new kit sponsor since 2011. And I got to go back and remember who the Portland Timbers old Alaska Airlines, right? For like the longest time, it was Alaska Airlines. The DiBella CEO was accused of unwanted advances and sexual harassment of at least three employees. So the Portland Timbers re-released their 2024 jerseys with no logo on the front. So good on Portland, by the way, for 86ing their relationship there with DiBella. Maybe they got to see what Alaska Airlines is up to, see if they get them back on the kit. But yeah, that's I appreciate you refreshing my memory, and I apologize for not knowing that. I should have, absolutely. Look, LAFC, we don't play well on carpet. We haven't played well on the road this season. It's the pesky pine trees of Portland. And this match absolutely lived up to the billing. Back and forth the first couple of minutes or so, Sergei Palencia to Ryan Holling said they got broken up for a corner and a very good, dangerous spot for the corner, but nothing came of that. And what I didn't know, what I should have looked into before the match, but luckily Max Bredos and Brian Dunseth told us this on the broadcast, among several stats where LAFC are the league leaders this season would be corner kicks. And our first corner kick drew us level with DC United with 44 corner kicks on the season, tied for most in Major League Soccer, something that Portland did not defend or does not defend very well. Typically, speaking of not defending well, in the third minute, right after the corner kick, LAFC got caught forward. It was actually Sergei Palencia who kind of got sucked in a little bit, got caught forward. It was Sergio Mora or Felipe Mora, excuse me, to Cabecita to Anthony. But the pass was just wide of Anthony. Little did we know that would be a harbinger of things to come. Portland does get a corner in the eighth minute, but we defended out nicely. And then in the 11th, absolutely terrible defending as our back line gets caught early. What I said in One More Sleep is that LAFC needed to get out on the front foot, see if we could get a goal scored early, but it was Portland to do so. And Evander with, I mean, it was a pass that wound up more looking like a shot. I think we decided that Felipe Mora got like a shin guard to it or maybe part of his sock as it just changed the spin of the ball just a little bit. But right over the top of the defense as Felipe Mora came streaking in from the left-hand side, beautiful little ball up top, great touch by Evander. And look, Max Bredos described James Pantemis later on in the broadcast as having on cement shoes, but there was absolutely nothing that Hugo Lloris could do. He was actually waiting for Felipe Mora to get a good touch on it. He doesn't really get a touch on it, and the ball kind of trickles into the back of the net side netting, and Lafferty, just like that, LAFC, 11 minutes in, down 1-0.
Not the start that you want, and really not the start that maybe we would have expected after such a strong showing from the top of the up against the top of the table in Carson last week. You can't always be surprised that we didn't kind of replicate that or keep the momentum going when you go up to a place like Portland. Historically, you know, that great crowd, tough surface to play on. So it wouldn't, a lot of the momentum might not have translated from the previous game, but we would hope that a few of these kind of mistakes would not be as apparent that we were seeing. I mean, like you mentioned, the kind of just the awful defending, a lot of chances within the first 10 minutes before that first goal, all of a sudden. So it's no surprise that they're getting a goal so early on as Portland. It's a little bit concerning as you go along in this game, wondering, hey, you know, what happened? you know, how come we're not seeing the team that we just saw last week against our rivals? You know, were we not up for it as we were that game? So who knows? We'd have to wait to see. But, you know, again, though, there's still so much soccer left to play in this match. Anything can happen. And with guys like Bawanga, who are already taking shots on goal, you know, it's we're never out of it. But you're right. It's a little concerning when 11 minutes in, we're the ones who need to be coming out with a hot start. And instead, we're conceding a goal in the 11th minute.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that we thought might happen in this match leading into Portland was that we wouldn't be playing as tight and as low of a block as we obviously played against Carson, looking to catch them on the counter, looking to catch them on set pieces. But, you know, we thought with the open run of play and with players like Kiki Oliveira and Matty Bogush, who certainly had himself a match against Portland, and Denis Bawanga, maybe we could catch them in a low block, because they wound up being in a low block a little bit more than we did. Obviously, going down to 10 men really helped shape their tactics for the rest of the match. But again, the way that we could not build on the momentum with our win against Carson, a little frustrating, and that no more frustrating than the 11th minute giving up a goal. Felipe Mora getting a yellow, delaying a restart, and that would be a theme in this match, the first of three yellows in this match for delaying a restart given out by our referee. Did not love the refereeing across the board on this one. I don't think it was very good either way, culminating with a cherry on top in the 7th minute of stoppage time, which we will certainly get to. I really liked watching the matchup of Juan Mosquera against Denis Bawanga in the 15th minute. Mosquera absolutely picking Denis' pocket once again, coming down that left-hand side. In the 19th minute, graphic number 2 showing LAFC leading in a stat. That would be fouls committed. LAFC leading the league in fouls committed so far this season. I imagine we're now leading the league in yellow cards as well after the 6 that we accumulated in this match, but I'll go back and check just in case. In the 21st minute, Kike Oliveira with a ball over the top. Top of the bar from the right-hand side. Nothing really close on that one, but a probing shot, I guess, which makes you have to keep him in front of you. And then just like that, in the 22nd minute, LAFC is back. A great ball in the middle. Listen, this is Scarf. I've said it once or twice before on the podcast. I'm going to say it one more time. Earlier in the season, I insinuated that maybe we need to drop Matty Bogush back into the midfield, sit Timothy Tillman down onto the bench, and start a real number 9, maybe a guy like a Nathan Ordaz up top. And ever since I said those words, all Timothy Tillman has done is to no scarf, no scarf, no scarf. Timothy Tillman is a best 11 player in Major League Soccer right now. Timothy Tillman is one of the best midfielders going in MLS. He has played absolutely lights out. He has barely come off the pitch this season. And if not for a beautiful through ball right down Broadway Center Street to Matty Bogush, we are not scoring on this play. I absolutely love the shot by Matty. The finish is great. A diving Maxime diving to his left could not cut off the angle, even though he came out nicely. A great finish by Matty Bogush. But it's the pass by Timothy Tillman, who has just continued to look in my direction and say, no, 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 Scarf, I am not leaving the pitch. LAFC levels after 22 minutes.
So I think the takeaway that we take from this goal here is that Timothy Tillman is a big fan of the podcast, listens to everything you say, and we appreciate your support, Timothy. Thank you, and keep up the good work out there. But to Bogush, who we saw it in this goal, we're going to see it later on. The thing about him is he's taking those shots that have the power behind it. As a fan watching, you're like, yeah, those are the ones we want. Just really fly right in. We don't always see those, but a lot of our shots are kind of frustrating, where maybe we're taking an extra touch. We're taking a little too much time to get going with it, maybe second guessing a little bit, making an extra pass when some of the guys should have taken it. So to see a guy like Bogush come in here and just pound it right at the goalkeeper or right towards him and make the goalkeeper have to respond to him and put him on his heels, that's what's refreshing. And I think we have to use that as the catalyst going forward for how we're going to be as an offense, because those goals are what's going to set the tone. And if we can get the rest of the guys on board and follow along with that, I think we're going to start seeing our numbers go up greatly.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing too is Maddie
and a Bogus. Big shout out high in the
yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm sorry, I think I'm a little behind on you here, so I was a little delayed. I just saw the comment. Just want to give a big hello to Suddy, our friend Suddy down here, chiming in from San Diego. Just hello to you back. Hope you're having a great day, Suddy. Good to see you.
Yeah, Greg Suddy on soccer. Make sure you guys check out all of his stuff he does on social media. He's a long time soccer media personality and super nice guy down there in San Diego, California. I think what we're seeing is Matty Bogus becoming more and more comfortable in that number nine role that he will not be playing after July, whatever, 11th, 16th, whatever, when Olivier Giroud comes in. But either way, we're seeing Matty Bogus become very comfortable in that nine role, continuing to push the ball forward, to look into being a true nine, trying to score goals, trying to keep the offense out on the front foot rather than set things up as a midfielder like he is normally used to doing. In the 24th minute, turnover to LAFC, right to Denis Bouanga. But again, it's Juan Mosquera and Kamal Miller in the middle of the box, turning it into a corner instead of an offensive opportunity. The corner got cycled out, but ultimately LAFC was offside. Maxime makes a save on Denis in the 27th minute. And look, again, this is one of those plays I was talking about. In the 30th minute, another rough miss for Denis Bouanga. A perfect ball, the cross from Sergi Palencia on that right-hand side to a streaking Denis Bouanga, who, I mean, look, he took this ball on a full run. 30th minute, one of the top scorers in the league, one of the top scorers in the world in 2023, and yet somehow could not find even frame on this one, at least bang it off a bar or something, keep it on play. But he bangs it over the bar on a full run. LAFC continuing to keep the pressure on right after that, but you just have to feel deflated that time and time again, you've seen Denis Bouanga with these plays where last year he's putting these in the back of the net. He's making things difficult for goalkeepers. This season, things have just been a little bit off for Denis Bouanga. And right after this play, Lafferty, they show the graphic where LAFC leading all of Major League Soccer in shots with 126. They showed a graphic later in the broadcast about Kike Oliveira and Denis Bouanga, both tied for the league lead, I believe, in shots or shots on target with 15 each. So we're putting balls near the net, sometimes on frame, sometimes at keepers. But it has been so frustrating. And when you can't put a ball in the back of the net in the 30th minute, you let a team hang around. And a player like Evander, with the skill level that he has, does everything he needed to in that situation. A moment of brilliance by Evander. LAFC caught again, sloppy play out of the back leading to a turnover and the ball over the top to Evander. He takes one touch with his chest, the second touch with his right, and absolutely snaps it back at goal above Hugo Lloris with the right foot, and Portland back up 2-1. And look, some plays your defense gives up. Moody was right there on Evander. This is a play where you got to just, as Philly would say, tip your hat off to Evander for the incredible offensive performance and movement. Evander with the goal. And there you go. There's Lafferty tipping his hat off. Evander was more of the unsung player coming into this match by us here at Defenders, but certainly, Lafferty, we slept on the real deal, Evander.
Right. You were making like a Portland supporter who needed to get his first come, first serve seat, just sleeping on him. I mean, but here's the thing. Evander was a constant throughout this game, always involved in the play. And going back to something you said earlier, shout out to the graphics department at Apple and MLS for giving us that stat that we were have 126 shots on goal that we're leading with, but they're not all converting, which is the shame. So the thing is, when you have somebody like Evander come in and is able to make a beautiful and a powerful goal like this here, it's unfortunately coming at a time when maybe we already should have been up by two or three because we're getting those chances and not converting. So now all of a sudden, a shot like this, is a little bit more devastating than you would have liked from somebody like Evander, and almost breaking our back to where now this 2-1 lead looks close to insurmountable because our shots are not going in. And it seems like nothing we're able to answer with is going to be just enough. So as a fan, these kind of make you hold your breath a little bit more than you'd like. But I think the thing is, our defense is still playing well. It's just that if we can start converting more on some of our chances that we're getting, these won't make it so dire for us. But again, I mean, you got to give all the credit to Evander with everything that he did throughout this game. It was only bound to happen that he was going to come up with a big one like this.
Yeah, he looked great. And just like Felipe Mora did after he scored his goal, Evander picks up a yellow after he scores his goal for delaying a restart. That's our second yellow for delaying a restart in the match. We got a little bit of HR shoving stuff going on here in the 43rd minute, a little bit of fireworks between Sergi Palencia and Maxime Crepeau, former teammates. Kike with a nice move to free himself on the right-hand side. Maxime makes a beautiful save from like 5 or 6 yards out. And then on the rebound, apparently Sergi Palencia kind of stuck out his arm. He kept saying, no, I'm using my shoulder, I'm using my shoulder. The referee and the VAR said, you absolutely did not. Gave Sergi Palencia a yellow card. But Sergi taking offense to Maxime Crepeau calling for the yellow so early. They got into each other's faces where Sergi shoves Maxime Crepeau. And just like that, I got a little bit of fireworks between the two former teammates. The difference being that Maxime Crepeau was correct and Sergi Palencia was wrong in what he was insisting to the referee. So Sergi picking up the yellow card, stoppage time, a couple of chances in stoppage time. Deniba Wanga looks like he was taken down from behind in the first minute of stoppage time as Kamal Miller went to ground with him, but no call was made. LAFC did get a long throw in that into the box, but it was denied by Portland. Anthony doing his best to dribble through most of our defense for a little bit before Murillo shut him down. And then in the third minute, Deniba Wanga getting a yellow for shoving the defender. I believe it might have been Claudio Bravo, number 5, who was defending Deniba Wanga. Denise shoves him in the back while Maxime Crepeau is being forced to come out and pick up the ball. So Maxime does a full front flip. This is the thing. Maxime Crepeau was Deniba Wanga's translator at times last season in the press conferences. And here you have the first of two times that Maxime Crepeau and Deniba Wanga would get tangled up in or around the box. Deniba Wanga earning a yellow card for the shove in the back. And LAFC finishing the first half completely on tilt, playing absolutely without poise, playing terribly, as Claudio Bravo owning Kike Oliveira on his side so far, and then the foul in the buildup leading to a yellow card and just a bit of frustration, that's for sure. As we end the half down 2-1, 3 yellows in the last few minutes, plus giving up the goal there in what, the 34th minute or so, was that? Yeah. So not the way that LAFC wanted to finish that first half at all, Lafferty.
No, not at all. I mean, look, the yellow cards just kept flowing from this referee. It was like a Vegas dealer over here, just dealing them out. But look, you had in the 43rd minute, going back to that, the little tiff between Crepeau and Palencia, it's like we talked about in the beginning, one of the things that earned Palencia his starting job was his feistiness out on the field. He's kind of that dog that's going to go after, and he brings a scrappy style of play. It looked to me like it was an unfortunate play where everything unveiled the way it did and where he got the yellow card. Maybe deservedly so. He definitely was in the wrong, even if it was an accident. And I think he was just upset that he didn't do it on purpose and was being penalized for it. But for him to go after Crepeau, there was a part of me that was like, oh, I love the feistiness. And I was like, bro, that's Maxime Crepeau. Like, don't go shoving him. And Maxime kind of had that look of, oh yeah, that's what you want to do. So it was a little bit of a torn heart there for me as an LAFC fan, trying to make sense of all that. But no, Sergio Palencia, like we talked about with Achuesta, kind of a double-edged sword. They're two players who are feisty. And with that, they're going to be aggressive. And that aggression is going to lead sometimes to these yellow cards in more volume than we would like. But also, we can't ask them to step down their level of feistiness in that play, because that's what makes them special at the same time. I think, though, the referee in this, it was kind of a theme, should have been a little bit more consistent with what he was giving out in stoppage time. You talked about Denis being taken down from behind. I mean, it looked egregious to me. And then if that wasn't enough, he sat there on the ground to point to the ref. Hey, take a look at this. You don't believe me? You think it was a flop? He's pointing to actual blood on his sock. How does that get there? He gets hit. He gets fouled. So for the ref not to call that after calling some of the things he had been for us was very frustrating. I think, though, one thing we've learned in the entire life of LAFC is that you can't rely on the referees to get behind you, and that you're almost playing against a 12th player in the official, because a lot of times they're not going to be consistent, and the calls that they're going to call for the other team are not going to get called for you. The Crepeau full flipping over to make after getting run into. Yeah, look, yellow card. Denis behind pushes his the defender from behind. Crepeau doing a great job getting out of the way of that. And Max Spredos on the broadcast talked about how he maybe has a role in the new Fall Guy movie coming out with Ryan Gosling. So, hey, I don't know. He did a great job doing some stunt work there. So glad he's okay, though. You know, obviously, Maxime Crepeau playing for the other team, but he's one of those guys that you hope does well and at least stays healthy. So one thing I saw in the chat that I wanted to say earlier, I think it was Mario? Yeah, someone needs to break the curse on Bwanga missing these shots. You know, I think that's a little thing too. We're seeing a little bit of frustration now too. So where Bwanga maybe gets beat by the defender, and who knows, maybe that frustration is what makes him push the defender into Maxine. He's clearly behind him and gives him that little shove. So, that could have been anything, but you have to wonder if there's a frustration on Denis' part that's starting to affect his composure and his gameplay throughout.
I want to bring up something.
And there was another one that I saw.
Sorry, real quick. I want to bring up something that Suddy is actually mentioning in the chat as well. I want to be perfectly clear. The refs have been bad all season. The refs were bad before the pro referees came back, and now the pro referees seem like they're taking a couple of games to get their sea legs back. But look, anybody that objectively watches this club for at least the start of this season has to say that the referees have actually worked in our favor quite a bit as well. That penalty that we earned, or quote unquote, from Denis Bwanga last match, where was it Yoshida or Yamane that went to ground very early, and then Denis kind of dragging the foot there on the back line. Many would argue that we did not deserve that penalty. I think that what the pro referees, or what referees in general this season, have given to us, they have also found a way to take away from us. I think that the referees just aren't very good at this level, unfortunately, and that's a little bit more to it than anything else. I think that if LAFC is going to complain about eventually the foul called on Nathan Ordaz in the box, or complain about the six yellows that we received here, I would actually argue, by the way, that go back and look at the six yellows that we earned. At least five of them should have absolutely been yellows anyway. I just don't think the refereeing has been very good at all this year in Major League Soccer, whether it's pro referees, whether it's replacement referees, even VAR, we have seen miss things from time to time. The refereeing just needs to be better. I don't know how to make that happen. I am just saying that what we are seeing is pretty terrible. Just about an hour into the episode here, episode 296, which, by the way, means we're only four episodes away from 300. That's going to be kind of fun. We'll be the second LAFC podcast to get there behind Heart of LAFC, which is kind of neat because they're like the Podfathers. They started a little before us, and here we are going to join them in kind of a fun club. But that being said, at the half, Phil Neville wanting to switch things up a little bit, and bringing on Christian Paredes for David Ayala. And so Portland looking to continue to press, continue to turn us over. And that was all well and good until the 48th minute. And you mentioned wanting to root for guys like Maxime Crépeau to have good matches, to play well against us. Unfortunately for Maxime, it would be an early shower. In the 48th minute, he makes a mess of things just outside the box, where he takes out Denis Bawanga after a great ball over the top from Edward Atuesta. And Robo836, in case you're joining us a little late, you had mentioned that we need to bench Ilya and drop Bogus into the midfield to start Kamara. We won't be able to do that next match because of yellow card accumulation with Edward Atuesta sitting out. I think we're going to have to drop Bogus into the midfield for Edward Atuesta and start Kamara up top. But either way, Edward Atuesta with a beautiful ball over the top, a nice little first touch by Denis Bawanga. And as Maxime comes to the top of the box, that little touch on by Denis gives him a little bit of space. Maxime Crépeau takes him out. The referee deems it is a denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Dog so indeed. And it is a straight red for Maxime Crépeau. All because, by the way, Claudio Bravo kept Denis Bawanga onside from the complete opposite side of the back line there for Portland by about a foot, foot and a half. Denis Bawanga is onside. Thank you to Claudio Bravo for keeping him onside. And the red card changes the entire complexion of the match for about 5 minutes. And then that is it. I'm going to talk about that as we get through this second half, because to be honest, after the first 5 or 6 minutes, there's far less to talk about than I would have hoped until we get to stoppage time. But it's James Pantemis. We mentioned him in the 18, how very rarely we mention the backup keeper in the 18. Well, this is why. Maxime comes off, as does Felipe Mora. Felipe Mora coming off for James Pantemis. So they're now down to 10 men. And Matty flipping Bogus, everybody, on the free kick, 51st minute. Matty steps up. It's Edward Atuesta on the right, Matty Bogus on the left. And wow. All I'm saying is that they talk about James Pantemis with the cement shoes. The wall, for some reason, stayed down. But like they said on the broadcast, well, if the wall jumps up, you get upset that the ball goes underneath the wall. I don't know. I'm just saying that that was a laser show put on by Matty Bogus. It is a Bogus brace in Portland. And just like that, we are drawn at 2. We are level once again, and we have 40 minutes plus stoppage time to figure out an equalizer. Surely LAFC is going to at least do something with this opportunity, right, Lafferty?
You would think, right? I mean, like, all the cards are in our favor here. I know that when you're watching this, you're like, all right, here we go. We're gonna take one. We're not only gonna get our first point on the road with this draw, but we're gonna keep it going and get 3. We have to see how that would play out. No spoilers here, but you would have to think too, like we said before, that's gonna set the tone. That that Bogus just blast right into the corner, make our guys play a little harder, shoot a little harder, and really take it to Portland on that. So how would they respond? We'll have to see. But you have to love what you see from Bogus there, because everything that he's bringing is full power, 100%. And it's going to make it difficult for any goalkeepers that are standing in his way, because he's not going to make it easy for them, and they're really going to have to step up if they want to defend Bogus. He's really proven to be a big threat for us offensively, and I think that his power is what's going to really make him stand out, where you have guys like Oliveira and Bawanga with their speed and their finesse. Bogus is going to be just a straight, powerful Polish power, as Max Bredos called him on the broadcast, just a powerful shot to defend, and that's going to be something that goalkeepers are going to have to adjust to.
Yeah, the frustrating part is that over the course of the next 40 minutes of regular time, rather than stoppage time, over the course of the next 40 minutes, LAFC able to do very, very little. In fact, right off the restart, Evander and Cabecita, a little two-man game, and you saw Murillo get very, very frustrated with his ball into the box. Evander given all sorts of space down that right wing, flicks it in, nice cross to Cabecita. He just couldn't get there as Murray got there first, played it out for a corner kick. Nothing happened on the corner, but how quickly Portland was able to turn the tide with just two players, Evander and Cabecita, on that one side. Over the next couple of minutes, we saw Matty Bogusz and Denis Bawanga twice. Denis hitting it into the side netting the first time, which I thought was a much better opportunity than he was given credit for on the broadcast. I thought that was another time where you're looking at Denis Bawanga and going, but you're supposed to be the alpha. You scored 20 in the regular season. What did we say? 37 last season overall between all competitions, and not able to make it happen again in the 55th minute. But this time it's from the opposite side, and that ball skied over the top of the bar. A little bit of frustration, I think, being shown by Denis Bawanga 55 minutes in. And I think it wasn't long after that where Steve Cherundolo decided, you know what, let's push some chips into the middle. Let's see if we can attack this 10-man lineup, especially after Cabecita was starting to get free down the channels every now and then. So Kai Kamara coming in for Ilie Sanchez, and then Omar Campos for Sergi Palencia. Palencia coming out because he's on the yellow. Kai Kamara, Ilie Sanchez coming out. Ilie also on a yellow, but more so to move Matty Bogusz back to midfield. So now you have a midfield of Edward Atuesta, Timothy Tillman, and Matty Bogusz. And up top, Kai Kamara in the middle, settling in with Kike Oliveira and Denis Bawanga. And then that also means, with Campos coming in and Palencia coming out, that Ryan Hollings had flipping sides with Omar Campos. So I don't know. I think the full scale wholesale changes there, moving defenders onto opposite sides, moving a player who had been more of an offensive threat into the midfield, and then Kai Kamara up top. It would take LAFC a while, unfortunately, to kind of find their footing with this new configuration, with this new lineup out there. Easily the most minutes that Kai Kamara has played in black and gold for us this season. And I will say this, a very good shift for Omar Campos over the last 30 minutes or so of the match, something that we really needed to see from Omar. But Lafferty, Portland making some changes of their own with Santi Moreno coming on for Antony and Dairon Asprilla on for Mosquera. And I really thought that Portland did everything they needed to do over the next, 30 minutes or so to see this match into added time without LAFC doing as much as raising a whimper on the offensive end.
Yeah, they did not want to play like they were down a man on this game. And we were seeing they had limited substitution windows, but they were making the most of them. Or I'm sorry, I stand correct. With their substitutions came later than ours. I think our substitutions came on because we wanted to strike while the iron was hot and Portland was still down with their maybe more tired players on and with only 10 of them out there. So putting in a guy like Kai Kamara to really give us, even though it'd be the most minutes that he's given us so far, really, you can see that Steve Cherundolo's focus was on the offense at that point, which is great because we should be attacking more and moving guys around like we were with Ryan and Bogusz. Maybe not their most advantageous positions, but ones that they're very comfortable in playing still as well and are still threats for us. So I think adding Kai Kamara on at that point is only intended to help our offense and try to capitalize on our position that we had. But like you said, with Portland, they were just not going to give up. They're always going to be a tough team to play. And even down a man, look, Phil Neville on the sidelines, you can see him too on the broadcast. He was animated like he was a supporter out there. Just he's firing his guys up, getting them ready. He's coaching them up. And I think that energy carried on to the field from the Portland players to where a lot of times we were able to make a lot of great passes and take advantage of having our man advantage. They were going to continue to attack and play very hard. So you have to give Portland a lot of credit for how they hung in there with it, because their focus was to keep it on to go into stoppage time and see this game through with maybe just a draw. But there were also plenty of times throughout where they very well could have taken the lead down a man. So this team was not going to give up. And I think that that's what we saw from Portland, was that no matter what we threw at them or wanted to change our approach to be more offensive, they were going to find the answers with their defense and really try to hold fast to this 2-2 game.
Yeah, I think the two best chances in the second half, you could argue, during the course of regular time, in the 65th minute and the 68th minute, both came off of Evander plays. Imagine that. In the 65th minute, that silly foul by Matty Bogus, 25 yards from goal, giving Portland a set piece. And off that set piece, Evander does his best in Ibowanga impersonation and bangs it off the woodwork, something that I don't think Hugo would have gotten to the ball at all. So you're looking at a set-piece opportunity where Portland able to make something happen in the 68th minute, Portland continuing to keep the pressure on right after their substitutions. Off the corner by Evander. Yep, it's Evander again. Hugo Lloris having to go down all the way, like there in the corner. It was almost as if Evander was trying to score an Olympico, but he put it in a great dangerous position. So right there, back-to-back great chances for Portland on either side of their substitutions as Asprilla and Moreno come on. And then you get a yellow card to Ryan Hollingshead for drawing after Dairon Asprilla draws a foul. You get another yellow card, this time for Matty Bogus for delaying a restart. And look, LAFC is getting a couple of good chances here and there, right? You get Kai Kamara with a header in the 69th minute. You get Kike with a shot across the goal in the 70th minute. And you get good passing that creates an opportunity in the 72nd minute with Deniba Wanga having another shot saved. But you just felt like, other than that little five-minute run between like the 70th minute and like the 75th minute, where LAFC held possession, created chances, created half chances, really valued the ball a little bit more from there on out until stoppage time. Like, I have like two or three notes for the entire match. And unfortunately, one of those was Deniba Wanga continuing to be snake bit in the 77th minute. A nice little 1-2 between Deniba Wanga, Timothy Tillman, but Deni doesn't do enough to get back onside, and Portland's defenders do a great job of taking a step or two up to prevent Deniba Wanga from getting onside. Even then, the pass goes from Timothy Tillman to Deniba Wanga right there on goal, just the keeper to beat James Pantemis. It wouldn't have counted because he was offside, but Pantemis still makes the save on Deniba Wanga, a microcosm of the year that he has had. Eric Miller comes on for Cabecita in the scarf minute for a substitution in the 83rd, which makes Diego Chara go back to his favorite position in midfield because, oh, by the way, when they went down men and did the substitutions, they decide, yeah, Diego Chara, you know how you've been a midfielder for most of your Portland career? Why don't you head to right back and shore that up for us a little bit as well? And then Kike Oliveira coming off for Nate the Great. Nate, oh man, Nathan Ordaz, I love this kid. Yellow card for Edward Atuesta in the 87th minute. And again, I want to mention this real quick, Lafferty, before we talk about stoppage time, where LAFC had two great chances. But in the 87th minute, Edward Atuesta, good morning, Isis. Good to see you. In the 87th minute, Edward Atuesta.
Good morning, Isis.
Picked up a yellow card to continue this run of yellow cards to start the season. And now with his fifth yellow card, Edward Atuesta will be sitting out our match against the New York Red Bulls because of yellow card accumulation. So it will be no Edward Atuesta in our match at BMO against the Red Bulls.
It's going to be something that I think as LAFC fans, we're going to celebrate the return of Atuesta, but this is also going to be a little bit of the baggage that we have come along with him, and something that we're going to have to live with if we want the Atuesta that we've known and loved to be here again, is that we're going to have to deal with these frequent yellow cards from him. I said frequent, not freaking, even though it is frustrating. But it's what we're going to see. And unfortunately, we were able to get through this game with, just one yellow for him and not a second at any point, which would have put him down, given the man advantage or evened it out for Portland and eliminated their man deficit, which is also another concern of ours, is that when we have the opportunity, like being up 11 on 10, if our guys are going to continue to make some of these, you know, just nonsensical or just unnecessary fouls that are drawing yellow cards, you know, we should be thinking about how we're taking advantage of being a man up, not worrying about if our guys are going to wipe out that advantage and make it even again based on something that was really just quite silly. So I think that, you know, we're going to see it again soon with as we go on into stoppage time. We're still drawn out two here. And then look, we got, we're shown 7 minutes of stoppage time. So at that point, when it's still just a draw and we have guys continuing to get yellows, you know, you really worry, like, is something going to happen for Portland's way? A foul in the box gives them a chance to go ahead, because our, I don't know if it's a lack of discipline towards the end of the matches or what, but, it's, we're biting our nails in a game that we're up with a man advantage this late in the game, where we should be just kind of parking the bus, closing it out, or hard to say parking the bus on a draw, but it, where it's one that we should be just kind of very clearly riding this one out and just waiting for the whistle to blow. Instead, you know, you have to be a little bit nervous going into the end here. Are we going to let this go? Are we going to let it slip? So those are the concerns that I think we have going into it. But I'll let you take it into stoppage here. Like I said, 7 minutes.
Yeah, and you mentioned parking the bus. I think that was clearly what Phil Neville is trying to do 83rd minute when he brings on Eric Miller for Cabecita. Well, Miller goes to right back. That takes off their last good offensive player, I felt, on the pitch. And look, I think that that's why Nathan Ordaz comes on just 3 minutes later for LAFC. What Steve Cherundolo is looking at is what? 4 minutes left in the match plus stoppage time. He knew it would be a good amount of stoppage time because of the red card and the VAR review and everything else. But with Antony off the pitch, with Juan Mosquera off the pitch, and now with Cabecita off the pitch, I think that, yes, they still had Evander on, but he plays a vastly different role when he's out there by himself. I think what LAFC was doing, what Steve Cherundolo was doing, was pushed all his cards into the middle, bringing on Nathan Ordaz. I don't think he was anticipating the yellow card just 1 minute later from Atuesta. But by pushing all those chips into the middle, what we saw was a very entertaining last 7 minutes of stoppage time. We had a Ryan Hollingshead header back across goal where Parentes had to scoop it up. And then Denis Bawanga, his shot saved in the 3rd minute of stoppage time, pinballs out to Kai Kamara, and Kamara gets his, he has this long leg, man, and he gets it stretched out, but just couldn't wrap it around. It actually looked like Timothy Tillman was in a really good spot to corral that rebound as well and could have maybe taken a quick touch in the box and put it away. And then what we would be saying about Timothy Tillman right now, oh, my God, the guy has been clearly our most valuable player during the first 8 matches of this season. But unfortunately, it's Kai Kamara who can't get his leg all the way around. And then the play that a lot of people will be talking about, saying that LAFC got robbed. Well, yeah, we did. But did we really deserve it in the first place? We played like crap the entire second half, if you ask me, down with Portland, down a man. But either way, Nathan Ordaz putting his body on the line, boxing out his defender. I believe that was Kamal Miller again. Boxing out the much larger Kamal Miller in the box, preventing him from getting all the way around. Look, Timothy Tillman scoring the rebound after the ball pinballing around the box, but it does not matter as it was deemed a foul by Nathan Ordaz before Tillman put the ball in the back of the net. Should LAFC have been able to continue play and maybe have it reviewed by VAR and see what VAR thought about the foul? Sure. But it was blown dead right away. So the Nathan Ordaz foul stops anything that happened after it, including the goal by Timothy Tillman. Frustrating for sure, as the referees, quote unquote, take one away from LAFC. But you know what? Last match, the referees gave us something that we might not have deserved. This match, they take one away. Thus is life with pro referees in Major League Soccer. And just like that, Lafferty, it's all over. Points to the spot, blows the whistle. We're done 2-2 in Portland. And I don't know that I've seen very many matches that could have felt more like they were played in Portland than this match. Lafferty.
Sorry. I had some audio issues there for some of it, but video froze real quick. But I know, yeah, what you were saying, I mean, this, the whistle blows and this game just, we survived it. We survived it. We got out of there with a 2-2 draw. Look, not all is bad. We leave there with a point. At least we got something. There were plenty of times where we thought maybe we weren't, especially in the first half, sometimes in the second. Wanted to go back, though. This is probably going to be the fourth or fifth shout-out to the graphics department, though, I want to say, for MLS. The thing about Kamara, when they came in, what they showed on the screen was a reminder that he's the third all-time leading goal scorer in MLS history, one goal away from tying Landon Donovan in with from Carson. And so that kind of gives you a little bit more incentive to root for him and when he's out there. So I think you have to wonder, too, if Kamara is thinking that with that, where if that ball gets past him and goes to Tillman, maybe he gets that shot and it goes in the third minute of stoppage. But Kamara also, I don't know, maybe he wants to go for that record and get that number two spot from Landon Donovan. I do want to bring, just going back to that fall on Ordaz, though, and it's more going back to what we talked about in the first half here. Yeah, I know. Like Suddy said, you know, does every fan think that the refs are always against their side only? Look, we get calls our way a lot of times. Sometimes we get calls that go against us when they shouldn't, of course. But the point that I wanted to make earlier, that I was trying to make earlier, was that it seems like what we see a lot is we'll get a foul called on us after watching it the exact same play done just seconds before by the other team. And you scratch your head and go, oh, how come that wasn't called for us before? And that seems to be a theme that goes through. But like you said, we also have one that was given us last week that was, you know, maybe controversial to where it ended up helping us beat the Galaxy. There was a lot of, you know, complaints about that one as well. And so maybe we just didn't get this one to go our way this time. And sometimes we do. But the point that I wanted to make was that it seems like what we saw early on in this match, where you're looking at Belonga very clearly with blood on his sock, that's not called a foul. And then things like this against Ordaz are called for a foul in a very opportune moment for us. So there's frustration all around from the pro referees. Everyone's going to complain when it doesn't go their way. That's certainly what I'm doing right now. I know that sometimes we get them our way, but I think that what I do miss about earlier in the season, when before the pro referees came back, were that it seemed like a lot of the times every team was just allowed to play on, where almost the referees were almost afraid to make a call in such a pivotal moment. And that allowed the teams to just kind of play through. And so it's when you see something here towards the end of the game where maybe LAFC could go up because of that, you see the penalty kind of take that away. So, but that's just where we go. And that's kind of that's just what we have to live with here in MLS. And what we're always going to do with the pro referees. And I think what we have to make sure that we do is just as what the players have to make sure they do is just know that you can't rely on the right calls to be made either for or against you at all times. And you have to just keep your composure and play through. And really, it's not to make excuses like, oh, the refs took this from us, or we should have had this, but the refs this. No, really what it's saying is that we need to make sure that we can't always count on the right call to be made. But you have to keep your composure too, and just make sure that when you have guys like we do that were on yellow cards all throughout this game, that we're still playing a tight game and a tight defense, and know that what are the limitations of what the referees are going to call, and maybe play a little smarter on that. So who knows? Would that foul on Ordaz be called at any other point in the game? Maybe, maybe not. But I think that what we should do going forward, especially now when we're going to be down out to Huesta, is kind of reassess how we're playing how we're playing with that, and just make sure that our guys are keeping their composure throughout there, and know that there's going to be times where we have to step up coming forward now that we're down a couple of players and with a short roster to begin with. So I'm hoping that we're going to see some new things here with the next game, maybe a little few more minutes from Kamara to get some more offensive firepower going. Maybe a little bit more feature for Daz. You like what you're seeing from him when he does get his minutes. He's making the most of them and trying his best to contribute. So I think I just saw Philly's comment in the chat. I'm going to get it real quick. But just to wrap this up, look, you know, you hate to see one of the last plays of the game be a foul, whatever. But it's kind of a mercy call for us here at the end of this one, where you just kind of wanted to end. Again, the good news is we came out with a point going into next week, a point on the road. We're going to be back in the friendly confines of BMO Stadium. And also, we're going to have some rest, which we're not accustomed to having from last year's schedule or even the year before. So, you know, we're in good position here, sixth in the West, really taking advantage of this start that we have some breathing room. And I'm excited to see what we can do against New York next week. Or the New Jersey energy drinks. I apologize, Philly. But yeah, as Philly said, it finally stopped raining in Queens. Let's play ball. And actually, as he said that, it stopped raining here in North Hollywood. So there's no baseball here being played. But Philly, glad that you're having a great trip out there and you're getting some great baseball weather. And I'm glad you like the shirt. I figured we'd represent you, even though you can't be here in person. Phil Monster Studios is still ever present.
Yeah, look, 17 shots in the match, just 5 on target for LAFC, 22 fouls in the match to go with our 6 yellow cards. And look, I said it at the end of the match, LAFC did not deserve 3 points on this one. I don't care what happened in that final minute. The soccer gods kind of torturing us a little bit there, dangling that carrot out in front, but we did not play well enough, especially over the course of the final 40 minutes. Up a man. This is not the way that we should have built on those 3 points that we took in our match against Carson. But that being said, we will get the opportunity to play against another very, very good opponent. And that's right, Philly. This year, those New Jersey energy drinks, they're kind of channeling the days of one Thierry Henry out there, maybe some Juan Pablo Angel back in the 2011, 12, 13, 14 days. New Jersey Energy Drinks at the top of the West, tied with Miami and actually technically leading based on points per match. It is a match likely with all of the pregame festivities to be sponsored by the 42 Originals, as this match taking place on April the 20th. That's right. I'll let everybody else fill in the blanks on that one. At 7:30 p.m. At BMO Stadium is our next match. And again, like you said, Lafferty, after all the Saturday matches, LAFC sitting 6th in the West on 11 points, 4 points back of Carson, bleh, at the top of the table as they beat Vancouver 3-1. There's still the St. Louis Austin match to go, which could affect our standings in the table leading into week 9. And as you said before, our first 12 matches this season are all a week apart, 7 home and 5 away. And we've played most of the away portions of those first 12 matches. So very excited to see what this club is able to do after getting all the rest, getting a whole week of training, and of course, playing in front of the 3252 at the friendly confines of the Chorus of the Black and Gold BMO Stadium. I do want to mention one quick thing. Lafferty, we've been here for almost an hour and a half. That's a really long episode by yeah. our standards. But Suddy did ask a question in the chat, and we do love Suddy on soccer. So I do want to bring this up just real quick. Suddy's question here at the end of the match. And by the way, after this, I'm headed out to Cal State Fullerton to go check out the match. But Suddy, and I'll put the question up here, says, can you guys talk about what you think of MLS teams in the CONCACAF Champions play? He's talking about CONCACAF Champions Cup. Is there still some move forward needed to catch the Mexican sides? And I think a couple of things are true. Number one, the Liga MX is farther along in their regular season, so maybe their squads are a little more put together, the offense running, the defense running a little bit smoother than we are at the start of our season. Number two, I think that there's still just a ton of talent in Liga MX that goes unnoticed or untalked about. It's not just the big clubs. It's all the way down the roster. But I want to mention one quick thing. It's very simple. When you bring butter knives to a gunfight, things are going to be different. And for Major League Soccer, as long as we continue to have the antiquated designated player system and the TAM and GAM system that we have for salary in Major League Soccer, then we should not be able to compete across the board on as high of a level as some of these Liga MX teams are able to do week after week, year after year. There are reasons why Liga MX teams have been able to represent CONCACAF time and time and time again, far more often than Major League Soccer. And I think none is bigger than the salary issues that are plaguing our league. Yes, that might mean that in Major League Soccer, we have some haves and some have-nots, some clubs that are willing to spend a boatload of money each and every season, and some that are not. But you know what? Them's the breaks. And I would be saying that if I were a fan or a supporter of Real Salt Lake or of the Chicago Fire or of Sporting KC or of Portland Timbers. And I am certainly saying that as a supporter of a club that I fully believe would go out and spend the resources necessary to compete on a global level if you took away a lot of these constraints. So to me, that is what I believe is the key to unlocking the true potential of the rivalry between Liga MX and Major League Soccer, and to start to assert a little bit of dominance in CONCACAF if we so choose to do so. My thoughts.
I mean, you said it all. That you said it well, much better than I would have. I look, what I do love though is that even though we tend to struggle, or most MLS teams tend to struggle against League MX teams, especially in CONCACAF, the thing is, what I notice though is that I love seeing more MLS teams make it and become a threat in the tournament, which is not something that you saw, you know, a handful of years ago. Now we saw Seattle win a few years ago. We've been to the finals twice. So that, look, we have our own problems we've got to fix in-house in MLS, but I think that it is inspiring, though, to see that MLS teams, despite anything against them, are continuing to make noise in CONCACAF. So they even gave them a shout-out on the broadcast yesterday. I guess Brian Schmetzer was saying to some of the broadcasters that they don't count Columbus out. Columbus is a team that we saw is very dangerous. But again, what we've seen from when we have to play Liga MX teams is that, look, they're going to play a different style than we're used to in the MLS as well. And so I think that once you start to adapt to teams and styles like that, I think it only helps them better and hopefully make great question from Suddy. I also just want to say to everybody here as we kind of wrap this up, thanks for letting me be a part of the broadcast here with you guys today, both Philly and Scarf, for allowing me to come on with you. I want to thank everybody in the chat. Thank you for the great questions and for following along and for chiming in with us. It's been a real pleasure. So I just want to thank you, Scarf, for allowing me to come on this Sunday morning and join you with the recap of this game. Again, it was another smokescreen kit game for us, but I certainly enjoyed being here today with you, brother.
Dude, thank you for coming on, my friend. It is always fun to have you on the broadcast. Look, this is episode 296 of the LAFC podcast heard around the world. We appreciate all of you in the chat, of course. Massive numbers again, both in the chat and watching along with us. We get to see a lot of those numbers on the back end on StreamYard. Thank you. Thank you so much. And again, head on over to defendersofthebank.com. Check out our shop with all the cool, fun merch that we have. Lafferty is wearing the Philomonster Studios t-shirt that Dexter, thank you again to Dexter for designing most of our cool, great merch that we have. And we want to thank you all again for sticking around for another episode here at Defenders of the Bank Philly. We miss you. We love you. Have a wonderful time at Citi Field. I will see many of you out at the LAFC 2 game. I want to break a little news. I'm not going to say who, because that'll hurt my source and it'll get me in trouble. But there will be some big names playing at the LAFC 2 match tonight. So make sure you head on over to Cal State Fullerton. Some names that you might normally see on the first team might be getting a little bit of extra burn before the New York Red Bulls match today for LAFC 2. So make sure you guys head on out to the LAFC 2 match at Cal State Fullerton. There'll be some names that you've heard of in the starting lineup for LAFC 2. Shout out to Isis, to Mario, and to Philly in the chat. We love having you in the chat, Philly. We also love having you on the episodes even more. And again, you know how we like to end almost each and every one of our episodes. This will be fun because Lafferty and I have had a bit of a delay throughout most of this episode, but we're going to try it anyway. And then I get to play the outro music because I'm producing this one. We love you all. Thank you all so much for joining us. And of course, as we like to say, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There it is.